Welcome to the Seattle Kitchen Show on Cairo Radio. I'm Chef Tom Douglas.
And I'm Terry Rotiro, the chef in the hat.
And I'm PDO.
And we have Rachel Bell in the house today. Look at that. Who knew? We have a large show for you today. I'm chef owner of many of Seattle's fine restaurants, including the one that we are directly above, Lola. Carlisle Room over there by the Paramount. Did you see Brandy 1-3?
Yeah.
I did.
Yeah. And New York Times the next day in their entertainment segment, headline, Told You So. It was who?
You
New
love
York
it.
Times wrote Told You So.
Yeah, it's a little.
Because they've been touting Brandy pretty much, and they gave her the best review of the night as far as her song.
She had a great show.
Yeah, I agree. What else? We have the chef in the chapeau here today.
Terry Rotiro, owner of Luc in Madison Valley, and Lule downtown Seattle at the corner of 6th and Union, bottom of the Sheraton.
That's right.
Also, just released a fragrance line, which will be available in this shop here.
We've been trying to get it for weeks now.
Sorry, Tom.
Just so popular, you're sold out, you can't give Tom Douglas any?
We can't keep up with it. Fragrance called Lule. And we have an eau de toilette, which is always making Tom laugh. Hand soap.
I just think they could come up with a better name for it.
Than toilette.
Eau de toilette. Yeah. Toilet water. Doesn't make sense to me. I'm not being mean.
We also have a diffuser. No, Tom, it's okay. It's for people who have just traveled and know what the word toilette means.
Doesn't it mean the...
No, it doesn't.
What does it mean?
Toilette is where you actually clean yourself.
Yeah, bathroom water.
So I was right.
You're not that far.
If you're using the bidet. And KDO.
That's right, KDO. And excited to be here with you.
Very excited to have you.
Yes.
It's always good. Okay, so today on the show, we are hosting a dinner party worthy of an Oscar, so to speak. So my guess is Oscar Mayer is coming to dinner, but we're going to find that out later.
Yes, we will.
Learning about truffle hunting with your last meal host, Rachel Bell. You can find her podcast all over the internet. Discussing our favorite taste of the week. And, of course, we're going to go battle it out on our Food for Thought Tasty Trivia Challenge at the end of our 2 hours. Really, it's worth the wait.
Last
week I got crushed. And I believe that I had to give away my sous chef position to my timpano class, which is coming up in the spring here. So I'm looking forward to that. I didn't even know I had a timpano class until I gave it away. So
what an amazing win for the winner, though.
Yeah, she's going to be really up here, and we're going to invite 24 people to buy tickets. And then we're going to have a competition, a timpano competition. You want to explain what a timpano is, Katie?
A timpano, well, I didn't know it until I saw The Big Night, so I'm not sure.
Movie.
Yeah, the movie, so yeah. I don't know how traditional it is. But it's this beautiful inverted casserole that after it's baked you invert, but inside are all these luscious Italian delicacies. You've got pastas in there. I think there's like meatballs and hard-boiled eggs and rice.
Sausages and spinach and broccoli. Rob and tomato sauce and cheese, mozzarella cheese, and it's all built into a bowl like a classic French. What is that? A charlotte that it gets to, or bomba?
No, like a charlotte. Kind
like
of
a charlotte.
Except charlotte is with biscuit. And
yeah, but what's the one that's round and you turn out the dessert? Is it a bomba?
But no, charlotte would be one of those. Okay. You invert it and
Anyway,
but savory. And Italian and delicious, and everyone gets super nervous when it comes to the turning it out part. So I think that's where your competition comes into play, is not only deliciousness, but execution.
Amy Richardson, who works here at the Hot Stove along with other places, she apparently has found some individual bomba pots. Timpano pots.
You know, she's really good at sourcing materials. I think that is one of her very awesome qualities.
Speaking of Amy, she's been over there at the convention center setting up for the Flower and Garden Show. And we are there all weekend long if you want to come see us. It's Saturday now. Sunday we'll be there all night. I think till 8 or 9 o'clock tonight we'll be there. And then on Sunday we'll be there all day also. So
it's a very popular show.
Terry Benson from our Facebook page actually just messaged us asking a question about the flower show.
Oh, yeah?
She wants to know, where should she go to get drinks or happy hour food? Somewhere nearby.
Don't these guys
you
have
should
some
go, yeah. You should go to Lule right next door.
Or Carlisle Room right next door.
There you go. All right. We'll let
exactly.
you know.
Exactly.
We have actually Carlisle Room is right next to the new convention center under construction. Have you seen the hole? That's that they
it
have.
It is impressive.
I have not. I've not seen it, but I know that you get very excited about big construction
projects. I do. I love it.
Yes.
Speaking of holes, have you taken a trip through the new tunnel?
I have not.
Oh, I've been through many times.
And? Oh, you have?
Oh, yeah.
How is it?
Don't go at rush hour. The exit going north, once you go all the way under the city from the stadium district all the way, you can't get off until South Lake Union. And it turns out a lot of people want to get off for downtown.
Well, it's already a mess down there. So
I know. I've been in 2-mile-long backups trying to get out of the tunnel going northbound, trying to stay downtown.
And how long did that take you, getting caught in that traffic?
Almost 25 minutes.
Yeah.
Because there's a light there on Dexter that you have to make a right turn at. So my suggestion is to go further north and get on Dexter sooner. Later. But you don't have to sit in that
line,
right? Turn
around a little bit. Yeah.
There's a little thing. I want to say it's Aloha Street or something like that, that I used to get off early on when I used to go to Adriatica. Remember when Adriatica,
the restaurant, was
on Dexter and you had to walk up all those stairs?
There was a lot of stairs.
4- or 5-story house that Adriatica was in. And, so that was my little secret exit to get into the Adriatica. Anyway.
I like it. Hot traffic tips from Tom Douglas on Seattle Kitchen.
So I'm not sure we have time for our ordinary. Go ahead.
I was going to say, why is the exit in the middle of Mercer, which is already a mess? Any idea on that?
Chef, you're just going to have to ask somebody who knows.
Okay.
Like the mayor. She wasn't even the mayor at the time.
No.
This tunnel's been going on for how long? So.
I know. The planning was done 5-7 years ago. So.
More like 15.
Well, yeah. Well, that's right. We're kind of slow.
But
right,
I do think it's a shame that they're taking down the Battery Street tunnel.
I know.
I know that it's got earthquake issues, but at least until they take down the viaduct and get better access from Alaska Way along the waterfront, to me, at least until they get that done, they should leave that Battery Street tunnel open. The market, there is no access to the Pike Place Market. In our city, there's no access point to the Pike Place Market. So I find it distressing.
I can see that on your face. Our listeners, some of our listeners can't see it, but you look distressed.
Let's get back to what we do best. Let's talk foods. When we come back, we are going to jump into letting go of recipes and why I might have a difference of opinion.
Okay, surprising.
From all of that.
I'm very surprised.
On Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. We're back to the Seattle Kitchen. We're here at the Hot Stove Society in downtown Seattle. Thank you for joining us all over the world. And we get letters from our fans from the East Coast and from London and all sorts of places.
That's right.
Somebody emailed me from Perth, Australia. Yeah. How about that?
That's a long way.
Yeah. Turns out the internet is connected all over the world.
Just figuring that out now. Yeah. Okay, cool.
Who knew? We're going to talk a little bit about letting go of recipes.
Yes.
Do you have any thoughts about this, KDO?
You know, I do. I saw this come through my Instagram feed about this New York Times article, essentially espousing that what we should all learn to some extent in our cadre of knowledge of being in the kitchen is not needing a recipe and understanding some basics around cooking so that we can just hop in at any given moment, take what we've got in our fridges and our freezers and our pantries and make something delicious.
Sarah, our producer, had an interview with Bridget Charters last week, if you were listening to our show. What do you think she would feel about getting rid of recipes?
Well, I mean, that's what she was kind of discussing, was that a good cookbook is one that gives you information, not just a recipe book. Mm-hmm. It's something that gives you the information to then expand on those recipes or change them. Like, she was saying that now she's not really, at this point, looking for recipe books. She has enough recipes. What she wants is the information to make something new. Like,
or the inspiration.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. Which I thought was interesting and hadn't... That's not how I had thought about like cookbooks beforehand or about recipes, that your goal should be to progress past them in that way. So when I saw this article, it seemed like it hit the nail on the head. Like it was continuing.
Chef, what do you think?
I think that that's how cooking got passed around for a few centuries, is by watching somebody do it and just repeating the same idea. Mm-hmm. There was no measurement. I mean, you know, the first cookbook that Julia Child wrote was probably a handful of this and a handful of that. And it's You know, it's not.
No, it wasn't.
Okay, so yeah. Maybe not Julia.
Yeah.
I do think that there is a place for this sort of technique, but I would also say there is still very much a place for recipes.
Absolutely.
And particularly, you know, what you're saying, Terry, about cooking traditions being passed down and watching someone, that gives you the scope of whatever the person is teaching you, but that doesn't account for, like, the knowledge that we want to acquire about, say, different cuisines. The other day I made a green papaya salad, and I was like, what is that ratio exactly? And I could sit there and test it out and add a little bit of this and that, but if I'm unfamiliar with, say, using dried shrimp, which I am, you know,
yeah, exactly.
it's going to be a big guessing game as to how much to put in when there are plenty of resources available to do that. On the flip side, one of the most popular books, cookbooks that I can remember of recent history is Salt, Fat, Acid, Heat, mm-hmm. Which then went on to have a really successful Netflix series. And that essentially is what this article is talking about, which is what are these key elements in creating something delicious without, you know, necessarily having to follow strict guideline.
I also think that if you're not familiar with the recipe where it's really foreign, like what you just talked about, you should follow a recipe the first time around to have a good idea of the concept. So you have an idea of what the balance is and all that stuff. If you are familiar with the recipe or it's a passed down recipe, there is many recipes that are a concoction of different ingredients, not a measurement of ingredients. So, you know, if you're making an omelet, obviously you don't need to go in a cookbook to make an omelet, right? Most people will tell you that. They can make an omelet. Well, if you had mushroom, you had goat cheese, you had herbs, you don't go in a cookbook to see how much of it you add. You're going to pretty much figure this out after a couple of time of making it and screwing it up.
And I think a lot of recipes are really about techniques, right? So making gravy, you don't actually add 4 cups of stock to 1/4 cup of flour into your 3 tablespoons of fat, or, you know, you just don't make gravy that way. Gravy is a taught tradition in a funny way. Sometimes
it's
verbal.
It's instinctive cooking.
But I would also say that there's recipes that are that have become family lore that you just don't want to mess with.
Right.
And I think that those are perfectly reasonable recipes. And I think unless you are somehow a super experienced cook, I would not mess with recipes.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Honestly.
But I think a lot of recipes are not necessarily weighed or measured. It's more a series of technique and adding ingredients. You know, that's what a lot of heirloom recipes are. Mm-hmm.
That said, I mean, we do a fairly regular segment of What's in Your Fridge. And I think What's in Your Fridge is a classic example of cooking without recipes and somehow calling upon some techniques. So if you, say, are looking at your pantry right now and you're like, oh, I got to clean this fridge and freezer and pantry out. What are some key elements that you would start to think of when building a meal without a recipe?
Quantity, number one. Like, it's kind of hard to do a breakfast for two if you only have an ounce of cheddar cheese, right? So then that will change maybe making a cheese omelet into making putting a cheese grated into your scrambled eggs, you know, for example. So it just changes what your capabilities are. Chef?
I think that I'm totally with you. I think the number of ingredients and the amount of ingredients is very important. But I think it's referring to the basic technique and basic instinct in the kitchen. Some people can boil water. They need a recipe. Some people have been in the kitchen a few times. They know that if you put an extra tablespoon of butter, it's just going to make it better. It's not going to make it worse. You know, that kind of feeling. Yeah. So you're not measuring like a tablespoon of butter when you're making a whatever, soup or whatever.
Yeah, but if you're making, let's say, oatmeal raisin cookies, and you leave out a cup of the 2 cups of... Well, that's you didn't
I think
make,
baking,
you didn't
baking.
Make that clarification.
Sorry.
But my point is, if you leave out a cup of the flour and you add more butter because you like it more buttery, it's most likely those cookies are just going to spread like a tweel on your cookie sheet and all go together and run together and blah, blah, blah.
So let's clarify one thing. Baking and pastry requires recipes and right measurement. Once you've got it down 10 times in a row and it's perfect, then you can mess with the recipe and see what you can get to.
I would also say there's ways to stock your larder with particular items where you can more freely, I think, go without a recipe. I think having things, I know, Terry, you're a big fan of this, various grains, whether it's quinoa or barley or any of that,
right,
will behave essentially the same way and will create that kind of starch component of the meal. Tom, I know you're a big vegetable fan, so having a lot of fresh vegetables mm-hmm. that can either be roasted or eaten raw or julienned on a mandolin, I think that also lends itself to a lot of different dishes. And then you're really just swapping out a protein.
And right. here's what I will say, like going back to our kitchen segments or where we do the fridge,
mm-hmm.
Just because it's in the fridge doesn't mean you have to clean out the fridge entirely today.
And so multiple
often,
meals.
So often when we do those fridges, we are trying to use up every ingredient, and
right.
you really should step back and try and
yeah.
just make something delicious,
yeah.
right?
Because yeah,
it doesn't
yeah.
do any good if you make something terrible, and then you have to throw the whole thing away.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, sometimes we just get a little carried away just because that's what we do. But if you're looking at your fridge and you've got a potato and an onion and you've got some herbs and then you've got fish and you got what leftover kielbasa, just make a little latke. Just make use your potato and your onion and the herbs and make a delicious little potato latke and be done with it and worry about the fish and the kielbasa and all that other stuff.
I don't know. Kielbasa and a latke sounds pretty
kielbasa
good.
Kielbasa and a latke sounds pretty good, yeah. Or smoke your salmon and make lox for a little
while. Or even fish yeah. on top of your latke sounds good, too.
But you know what I mean. It's
yes.
like, you know, make something delicious first.
Right.
And then if you're going to add another ingredient to it that you want, go ahead. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Why not? All right. The next subject I know is near and dear to your heart, KDO, because it involves dogs.
Yes.
Yes,
I love
indeed.
Them.
why don't you have a dog?
That's a really
Did
great
you
question.
Eat your dog?
No, maybe oh. I should get a dog.
Okay.
I think that's
I
next.
Suggest all beef wieners. Truffle Hunting with Rachel Bell, one of the personalities of Cairo, the station itself.
Yeah, the Cairo family.
We love her. She's been on the show many times. We'll be back with her on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Here, just staying. We have a live audience.
they're busy.
All right, we are back in the Seattle kitchen on Cairo Radio. I'm Tom Douglas,
and I'm Terry Rotaro, the chef in a hat,
and I'm Katie O.
And we're going to go truffle hunting with a very familiar voice from Cairo, Miss Rachel Bell. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, guys.
Hello, Rachel.
How's
Hello.
Your podcast? I feel like it was so many years ago that I told you what I was going to do when I die.
I know you before, were my very
what are
first
we,
guest.
Where before I die, I had to come up with my wake, right?
Come up with your what? Your wake? Well, you didn't have to, but you did. For anyone who hasn't listened, the podcast is called Your Last Meal, and Tom was my first guest.
Uh-huh.
And I asked people what their last meal would be, but Tom said, well, you know, regardless of my last meal, I have already planned the menu for my wake.
Yeah.
Tom already knows what the menu is going to be, mm-hmm. where it's going to be. It's mm-hmm. going to be a Chinese seafood menu. So mm-hmm. go back and listen to the first episode. No one else has...
And then when I'm done, you know, like for my burial, I'm going to be wrapped in gauze and
yeah.
like slid off the boat and drift to the bottom of the sea and be eaten by crabs.
Those are going to be very healthy.
It's going to be their best crab. And they're going to say, you know, fat really is where all the flavor is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm glad you're doing...
Retribution also for all those years of you
yeah,
eating all those
it's only
crabs.
Fair.
They're siblings and relatives and things.
Well, I'm glad that's going to be after the wake because you want people to eat crab at your wake.
Yes,
because
yes.
then if you went under, the crabs ate you, then your guests mm-hmm. ate those crabs, mm-hmm. they would be eating you.
I know yeah. this is going to just off topic just a little bit, but
just a
what
little
do you
bit.
Think about the new pods where you put the... your body, and then it composts, and your juices come out and serve the garden well.
Your that juices. Is actually
well,
what
your body
I,
turns into juices, right?
I would love to be composted, actually.
Yeah.
I'm serious. I've
Have
thought about this.
Have you seen the
this.
Pod? Like the mausoleum
no.
pods?
But I did do a story in West Seattle. They do that for animals. They
uh-huh.
do water cremation is what they call mm-hmm. it, but it's basically composting. And I was like, yeah, put my body in that.
So what do you call it? Like they call it like fish tea or something when they use fish for that. What do you call it when you use a human for that?
Human tea?
Human tea.
Humanity.
Humanity. Oh, that was good. At the same time. Okay, you're here to talk about truffle hunting.
Hi, welcome
hunting.
To Seattle Kitchen, a show about death.
Yeah. Let's talk about truffle hunting
yes.
dogs.
This was so cool because I did not know that there were truffles in them hills here in Western Washington. And when I went out with Truffle Dog Company, this business that will... teach you to train your dog to be a truffle dog. They were like, oh yeah, they're everywhere. And so I was posting all these pictures on social media of the truffles we found, and everybody was messaging me going, are you in Italy right now? Where are you? And I was like, no, I'm an hour north of Seattle. Mm-hmm. So we have black truffles and we have white truffles. And we went out for an hour and filled a huge Ziploc bag with black truffles. Mm-hmm. I could not believe it. But the thing that they do is training dogs. So that is the best way to find truffles, the easiest way, and also the most environmental. Mm-hmm. Because if you don't use a dog, it's called raking. And so people will go out. First of all, truffles have a relationship with the Douglas fir tree. So that's where you're going to find them, in the Douglas fir forest. So people will go out and just rake around those trees. And then that destroys the ecosystem. But also, they're just pulling up any truffles and they don't know if they're ripe or not. So the dog are trained to only find the ripe truffles. So Pacific Northwest truffles had a bad reputation because these rakers were selling unripe truffles to restaurants and the chefs couldn't tell when they got them. And then they start trying to cook with them and they're like, these are not good.
They have no flavor.
They have no flavor. And so now this one woman who owns this company, she's kind of the one who started this here in the Pacific Northwest, is making sure that local chefs are getting good truffles.
Oh, Rachel, do you know that it is my dream to have a Lagotto Romagnolo, the little cute truffle dogs?
Yes, that's the Italian dog, and she has two of them. They are very cute. So one of the coolest things that I learned was what to do with the truffles when you get home. I had only been familiar with shaving them on top of something like risotto or eggs or pasta, but she taught me about infusing. Mm-hmm. So what you do is you take a container and you put a handful of truffles in next to not touching something fatty. So they like to stick to fat. So you'd put in a whole stick of butter or a whole thing of cheese, or, which is really cool, raw eggs in their shells. And within around 24 hours in the fridge, the truffles will completely permeate those fats. They will stick to the yolk in the egg. So anything you make with those will be truffly. So the truffles only last about a week and they go bad. But then I have this, butter in my fridge now for like 3 weeks that just continues to be truffled.
Now, if it smelled really good, you wouldn't be able to open your fridge without being blown away. I mean, that's what a beautiful white truffle will do, right?
Yeah.
The aroma is so intense.
Yes. So you have to have it in a sealed container. Yeah. Otherwise, your whole fridge will get truffly.
Actually, you should be careful about sealing it because it's a live product. So you actually don't want to seal it.
If you do, you have to put it with rice or something.
Yeah, put it with rice so humidity doesn't rot the truffle.
She told me to put a bed of paper towel and then change that out every day because it did start to get moist. But so I made a truffle mac and cheese with the butter that I truffled, the sharp cheddar that I truffled, and then I shaved truffles on top.
Uh-huh.
It was so delicious. I truffled an avocado and made avocado toast with it. I actually truffled a butternut squash that I had roasted, and I just put that in the container, and it stuck to the oil. I truffled my stapler. I truffled my cat. Like, it's so good. Uh-huh. And it's so fun to go foraging because, where we live up here, there's so many amazing things, crab and mushrooms and truffles, and it's all the most expensive things, and you're getting them for free, and it's really fun. It's like thrift store shopping in the forest.
So where did you go hunting?
I don't know that you can just ask that. She almost gave it up, too, until I warned her.
No, I'll tell you the city, but I won't tell you exactly where. But we were just in Stanwood, and honestly, we were right off of a dirt road. We walked in about 3 steps, and a dog found a truffle. It's not like we were deep, deep in the forest. And she says that you can train any dog that they've had through their program, Chihuahuas all the way up to Burmese Mountain Dogs. So if you're listening
I'd be more comfortable with a Burmese.
Some dogs are better than others, but all dogs have good noses, and she claims that any dog can be a truffle dog.
So let's talk about the dog for a second, since Katie is so enamored. Oh, what did you call that at the Italian one?
Lagotto Romagnolo.
I'm so impressed that you know that.
I love this dog. I think that they are just like a really, really smart, clever. And I think like the AKC describes him as like undemanding.
The American Kennel Club?
Yes. That's the one.
Sorry.
You're on the acronym
level. You got it.
I met a breeding pair of those dogs at the Blackberry Farm in the Smoky Mountains of Tennessee. Because they have a whole program there. And their dogs... they get, 3 litters a year, I think, is what the thing is. And they are 4 years out, those dogs.
Oh, you're on a long waiting list.
And they are $12,000 a puppy. $12,000 a puppy for that classic, what did you call it?
A Lagotto Romagnolo.
Yeah, of course, that one.
Yes. Mm-hmm. They look like a doodle. They're curly and very cute and fuzzy.
Yeah, and they're not super big, and they don't have fur. They have hair, so they're hypoallergenic, and they're good with other animals. And
and they can find them truffles.
And they can find them savory, savory fungi.
I'm going to ask Chef a question about this, since you are so enamored with all the aromas of these truffles. Chef, I know I have never had an aromatic Northwest truffle. Have I just not had a ripe truffle, or have you... Do you agree with me that they just don't have the punch?
No, I agree with you. What the problem is, you and I are both used to the Perigo and the Italian truffles, and they definitely beat the punch on that one. They're definitely a lot more tasty. They keep their flavor and they keep their odor a lot longer. My biggest problem that I have found with the black truffle from the Northwest is when you put it in warm, it dissipates, and you don't have a, you know. So
when you put it in warm, what?
In warm liquid or warm sauce or whatever, it dissipates totally, and you don't have any backup with that. So I definitely agree with Rachel about you definitely should put it in cold product, butter, whatever you're going to do, and, you know, and infuse it into that in a cold manner. I do oil with that. Like if you take half olive oil and half canola oil or another oil, and you blend the whole thing into a blender with a big truffle, you'll have a wonderful truffle oil, and it will be real truffle oil as opposed to what's on the market, which is all synthetic. So
yeah, I don't think most people know if you buy a bottle of truffle oil, it is usually synthetic.
Yeah, there's just out of a lab somewhere.
Yeah, yeah.
We're not talking about a dog.
I thought that the black truffles were a little bit mild, and just like you said, they dissipated. Yeah, but the white truffles were very, very aromatic, the ones that they found. They were very, very strong. And yeah, they were really good for infusion, but the white ones were also quite pungent when I shaved them over food as well.
I think it's the white one is always a little bit stronger. It's what the white differentiate from the black. Mm-hmm. It's usually more perfume.
How many white compared to black did you find? You had a whole Ziploc.
Where we were was only black truffle. So there's certain areas that have white and have black, but they had white in the truck. And so they just gave me a bunch of the white ones.
That is nice.
And you know people who do this, they don't mean anything to them anymore. Because I was like, no, this is too many. I'm not going to be able to use them in time before they go. But they're like, just take them. Who cares? They're like, I can't even give them away anymore to our family and friends. They don't want them. And I was like, okay. And I have this like Santa sack. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's pretty cool. It's
very
all
cool.
of Western Washington, also in Oregon. The variety is actually called an Oregon truffle, even though they're in Washington. So yeah, the company is called Truffle Dog Company. Thank you. I come with the facts.
All right. Coming up next, it's a fact that what three cheeses should you serve at your next dinner party? We're answering that question and more straight from our listeners on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Welcome back. It's the Seattle Kitchen Show. We're online dating right now with our producers. Because, we're just trying to find the right person for them all. I'm Chef Tom Douglas.
And I'm Terry Roach, your older chef in the hat.
Katie O.
And Katie O, we have many questions from our listeners.
That's right. It is time for questions from our listeners. This is where we go to our Facebook page, Seattle Kitchen, and ask you if you have any quandaries in the kitchen. But today, because we're taping in front of a live audience, we have Jim. Jim from the audience. Jim, I feel like you're here maybe for some free consultation from the chefs.
I am indeed.
Yeah,
yes, yeah. So for celebrations, I like to entertain at home. Mm-hmm. And I'm always looking for a good new dish to serve.
Mm-hmm.
So
what's in your wheelhouse? What do you own right now?
Well, the one gotcha is my family has a lot of allergies.
Mm.
So,
do you want
there's a
list?
Lot of families out there. You can just trade them in.
We were just discussing that, my daughter and I.
I mean, it feels like there's many families on every block.
Yeah, Jim, we'll take you in, though.
Okay. All right.
Would you like to start listing some allergies?
I will list the allergies, and if we could come up with a nice celebration dish that would work for everyone, that would be great. So... Celiac, so no gluten-free, vegetarian.
Okay.
That's not an allergy. I hate to break you the news.
I know, but it's a constraint.
Yeah. Yes, it is.
And then my wife has an allergy to nightshades. So that's potatoes, tomatoes, eggplants, peppers.
I don't know if you know, but in the last segment, we talked about human composting. We can just put her down.
Tom's got some serious feelings about these restrictions.
So,
kidding.
Chef Rotaro, what would you do with all of that? I know Tom would have strict opinions on that. Yeah.
So, well, the celiac part is very serious. The gluten-free is very, very serious. And in today's world, it is a very, very high prominent item that keeps coming up over and over and over, much more than it has. You know, it keeps on growing for the last 20 years. So it is something we take very seriously. There are, in celiac, if you're really, really allergic, you can't even walk into a restaurant that actually has any kind of flour or gluten in the air. So, for example, in both of my restaurants, we have baguettes because we're French. we do many dishes gluten-free, but that does not make it necessarily clean for somebody who can't even breathe anything like that in the air. So you have to keep warning that.
That's correct. We even have separate cutting boards that we use.
Yeah, so it's very, very... Well, we don't... When we do gluten-free, we don't cut on the same cutting board. But my point is it's in the air, and some people are very sensitive to that. So I would recommend walking around with an EpiPen, number one, making sure you don't end up dying in a restaurant. But most importantly, gluten-free, there are a few grains out there you can use. I always like to use grain because it's one thing that some people are missing, especially with the wheat. You know, almond flour, things like this for desserts are very commonly used. It's always a good base to start with because you don't have to use flour, processed flour. Nuts are very good. And then soups.
I got a dish.
Go ahead.
Want me to jump in?
Sure.
Considering he didn't want to hear from me, I'm going to talk to you, chef, over here.
Just bypassing our guest, Jim. Interesting.
Jimmy's talking.
So, chef, if you will tell Jim,
so Jim,
that I would take some classic Seattle tomatoes, which would be green.
I've got to stop you right there.
Oh, nightshades. Yes. All right. Oh, so you can't do eggplant either.
No.
So let's do... Okay, I'm stuck again.
Well, interesting. I was actually thinking, no one asked me either.
I'd go with greens.
But, you know,
sure.
There's so many. I just went to Plenty of Clouds recently and had the most delicious Szechuan Yunnan-style cuisine, and I felt like that really would lend itself.
Szechuan has peppers.
Yeah, peppers.
And that's also a nightshade.
You can keep that out. My point is that there's, like, very delicious sauteed greens. You can think of garlic. You can think of all sorts of flavors that, you know, basically are enhanced in those dishes. Tofus, mushrooms, lots of savory items that I feel like are nice for
what you're talking
about. Well,
just go back to that. Go back to where you are and do, like, shiitake skewers. Saturday,
yes,
with peanut sauce and put them on top of like a sweet potato, Korean sweet potato. Mm-hmm. Oh, you don't know potatoes, right?
Sweet potato is fine.
Korean sweet potato noodles.
Okay, yeah.
Those little glossy, slimy little sweet potato noodles.
I love those with that kind of extra bite to them, kind of bouncy little bite.
Douglas, you're coming through.
Shiitake satay with peanut sauce.
We're doing this, Tom. Yeah. No one asked us, but we're here anyway for Jim.
Greens, you know, we have all kind of greens growing in the Pacific Northwest. And mushroom, to go back to mushroom, it's a great base for a meaty and more substantial meal or an entree, for example. So you have this huge panoply of vegetable. My place market is full of gluten-free and, you know, just don't buy any nightshade. Just buy things from above the ground.
There's
plenty of that.
All right. Thank you, Jim, for your question.
Thank you.
All right. Moving on to our Facebook page, this next one comes from John Stevens. John Stevens wants to know, tips for making amazing French toast. Who's the French toast expert here?
French and you're the toast, so let's get together.
All right. So get a good crusty loaf. I really don't like French toast made out of, like, just plain white bread or things, soft bread.
What about, like, a challah?
Nope, too soft for me.
Still too soft, okay?
That's me. He's asking me. You're asking me, right?
I am asking you.
So I would take a great crusty bread and then make up the custard.
So originally, French toast is made with older bread.
Older bread, stale bread.
So stale bread, kind of idea.
Exactly.
And that's
to me, once it's stale, you probably shouldn't eat it. Why bother? It's stale. It's not good.
You're over it.
Word stale doesn't really reflect. A day old bread will be a little bit drier and a bit, you know, and you can use that and make French toast with that because you're going to soak it into that milk, eggs, and sugar kind of combination. And then I like to put, at the restaurant, we put a, we use cereal to put on top of the crunch cereal on the outside of the French toast that provides that really nice crunchiness and sweetness on the outside.
You put Captain Crunch on the outside of your French toast?
Not Captain Crunch.
Like a cornflake?
Like some good cornflake, Tom.
Like some good cornflakes. I mean, none of those trashy cornflakes.
Is that like a Kellogg's brand or like a bulk version?
PCC version.
PCC version.
Okay.
All right. So then the custard, I use cream or half and half.
Uh-huh.
I use eggs. Maple syrup for my sugar instead of other
Absolutely,
sugars.
Yeah.
Cinnamon, and then I grate an orange, the zest of an orange, and the juice of an orange into that, and that's my custard.
And I love nutmeg in there.
A little bit of nutmeg. I put cinnamon. If you want that recipe, it's in my first book, Tom Douglas, Seattle Kitchen.
So the secret is also not to start too hot of a pan, because otherwise you're going to burn the outside before you do anything good. So it's bread, so you want to make sure you don't go too high on the heat. But you also want to be patient and make sure then the crust gets formed.
Right. And then I tend to like to pop it in the oven for the last minute or two of cooking at 400 degrees so that the custard that's soaked into the center of the bread
is cooked.
It's cooked and puffs up.
Mm-hmm. I'm into it. This sounds delicious.
Yeah.
Do we have time for another question?
I don't think we do because we have time for another taste after the break because we're coming up with our Taste of the Week on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. All right, it's very busy here at the Hot Stove Society. We're back in the kitchen on the Seattle Kitchen Show. I'm Chef Tom Douglas.
And I'm Terry Rotula, Chef in the Hat.
And I'm Katie O.
We have a big trout lunch coming here today, and that's my taste of the week because Trout Unlimited, the group that works to preserve our rivers and fresh water and things like that, is going to come here for lunch today, 25 people. I'm cooking trout three ways. So
my taste
is going to be trout. I'm doing the first taste is going to be a little salad, a bitter salad, like radicchio and escarole in combination. And then it's going to have some tea-smoked trout. So I cured the trout. I boned it, filleted it, boned it, pin-boned it, and then cut it into little chunks, and I tea-smoked it over pear wood that's got some black tea on top. So then you brine it in soy sauce, mirin, and water. That's it.
Delightful. 20-minute
brine, maybe at the most, 10-minute brine?
Yeah.
And then do that light smoke, 5-minute smoke, and then just finish by baking it in the oven. And then it just pulls apart, and we're going to garnish the salad with it.
Mm.
And then we're doing a trout escabeche.
Escabeche.
Yeah.
And that's going to be fun with vinegar and onions and some peppers, maybe some little pepper rings. And then we're doing a whole trout with grilled apple rings with some cider butter.
So. Mm. That is still one of my favorite. This is not my taste of the week, but it certainly was my taste of the week. Many weeks working above the Palace Kitchen is the whole trout over the applewood grill. Mm. So good with that smoky wood. Delicious.
We've been serving that trout for 25 years now at Palace Kitchen. And this
not the
week,
same trout, I hope.
This week, we couldn't get it because of the snow. We were struggling to get trout. We had to go to Costco to get our trout for this class.
Just
today.
Like regular people, just going to Costco.
We do trout al Monday Nut Luc for 9.5 years now, and it's very popular. And same thing, we were running really low, like, hey, chef, we're running out of trout. I'm like, well, when you run out of trout, you run out of trout.
Yeah,
I mean, you can't go fishing when there is a foot of snow outside. So yeah,
that's right. Terry, what was your taste of the week?
My taste of the week was a little radicchio salad with apple, walnut. It sounds very simple and clean. No. I actually was in the restaurant and it reminded me how much I love good bitters in my salad.
Mm-hmm.
A good radicchio apple, very simply done, thinly sliced apple, toasted walnuts, and shaved parmesan on top of the salad.
where did you
and
have this salad?
White vinegar and olive oil. I had that at the butcher's table. I went to the butcher's table for the first time, and it was delicious. I mean, I was very, you know, often you go to restaurants and you order a salad, and I always go, we're going to see. And it was
really, you feel that way? You feel like you order a salad and you're like, we'll see.
Well, because sometimes, I mean, I've had some very horrid salad in some places, even some new restaurants. Mm-hmm. I don't need to name names, but actually very recently I had a Caesar salad that was so remote from Caesar. I don't think it's ever been to Italy. Mm. I mean, it was
well,
like
that's
so...
That's good because Caesar's from Mexico.
I know that, but I'm just making a
he
point.
He knows that, obviously.
I know Caesar myself. Anyway, I just thought that was random. And I think, yeah, I think a good salad is not always easy to get. You know, very often it's the greens are old or not fresh. The dressing is overdone. Anyway, this was perfectly balanced, and it reminded me how much I like, most importantly, the bitters of the wintertime, radicchio, endive, frise. All those are very good lettuce for the winter to use. That's what you're supposed to use. And watercress, as soon as the snow goes away, watercress is going to pop up everywhere, you know, spring, a good spring bitter. So that's my recommendation, is make yourself a good salad.
Delightful.
Here we go.
You know, I took a little trip over to Wajimaya, my favorite store. I feel like I always find something new or forgotten in the aisles. I will say they were completely stocked on the chili crisp. So I don't know if that's the case today. Don't take my word for it, but I was just shocked. I was so stunned that I bought multiple jars because I was like, I don't know when I'm going to see this again. My always taste of the week. It's my always flavor. But one thing that I think everyone gets excited about when they go to that particular grocery store is the snack aisle.
Mm. Mm.
Can't get enough of that snack aisle. I love foreign flavored snacks. And one of my favorite things that is definitely a guilty pleasure that I like to get there is their potato chips, their Calbee potato chips, which is essentially like the Asian Lay's potato chip.
So Calbee being mirin, soy sauce.
No,
sesame.
Calbee is the brand name, so it's C-A-L-B-E-E. And these chips come in a yellow bag with a cartoon potato on the front with eyeballs and arms and the whole nine. And they're seaweed flavor, so they're little flaked bits of seaweed. But, of course, you know, they probably throw some MSG and some other very savory things
in there.
I think
I would like that flavor more than that blue cheese chips.
I think that you would love it. I'm going to get you a bag of these.
Yeah, I think I would like it.
It is impossible. Like, I brought them to my office, and everyone just ravaged them.
Yeah,
it was
I think
a little
I would
bit like please take these away because we're all going to get sick off of eating these potato chips. But, you know, it's a fun exploration. I feel like if you're in that area of town, get yourself some snacks.
It's true.
Yeah.
And the chili crisp is so cheap. I want to say it's $3 a jar.
It's no cost at all. And you put those on some sautéed Brussels sprouts like I did the other day. It's just delicious.
I'm doing a Rover's pop-up on Monday at Luc. And one of the first amuse-bouche is going to be a grilled leek soup with that little...
Stop it. With chili crisp on top.
Heck yes. It's delicious.
Do you want me to buy you a bag of potato chips? You can have that as one course. You just serve people potato chips.
No, we're just using the chili crisp on top of the grilled leek soup. So it's very cool.
Now, you know, Chef, that jar of chili crisp that we've often talked about on the show, there's not one word on there that says natural, right?
Oh, you know what? Okay. I understand that, Tom.
Okay, so I'm just saying, if you're a purist, you should really read the ingredient list before you buy that stuff. There's benzonite, there's MSG.
Yeah,
I mean,
it does funny
sorts of things
thing to me when I eat it, for sure.
Yeah.
It does funny things to you. Does nothing but bring me joy.
All right. Katie, do you know who you are inviting to the Oscar party at your house?
Oh, I certainly do.
Good. I'm glad you have something in mind because we have a very big night planned, Chef and I do, of Oscar-worthy items to serve. And do we know the ingredient yet? No, we don't.
Yeah, we do know, Tom. It's all Oscar-driven every
Oscar Mayer Wieners, right?
It's themed.
It's themed.
It's a themed dinner.
All right. We're going to come back and talk Oscar dinner on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. It's time for an Oscar award party, and we're going to do this at Miss Katie O's house. I'm Chef Tom. Tom Douglas.
Terry Rotiro, the chef in the hat.
And I'm Katie O. And you know, my television's in my bedroom, so that means the three of us are going to have to hang out in my bedroom to watch the Oscars.
Wow, who knew?
You know, or I'll bring the television.
No. Let's do it on the bed.
It'll be a picnic style.
Oh, yeah. So now, man, I was going to make a chili. That's going to be...
That's great. I'm sure the room will smell fantastic after we all leave. Yes, we are going to have an Oscar-themed dinner party at my place. And today, instead of doing one ingredient for every course, though I did like where you were going with the hot dogs, the Oscar Mayer wieners, we are going to do an Oscar-themed dinner where every course needs to be based on one of our Best Picture nominees. Mm. Are you familiar with the nominees?
And the nominees are
Black Panther, Bohemian Rhapsody, The Favorite, A Star is Born. Tom, I know you saw that one, yes?
I've seen all three of those.
You've seen all of these. Well, I listed four, so.
No, I'm talking about A Star is Born.
Okay, I was going to say. Roma, did you see Roma?
Nope.
Okay, it's very good. Green Book, Vice, and Black Klansman.
So we have to pick, the rule is we have to pick.
A movie? For a course. Movie per course, and you're going to do it themed. Themed courses. Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm going to start with The Star is Born and make the cocktails.
Don't you want to know who we're inviting?
Oh, we're inviting somebody on top of that?
Yes, of course.
Oh, my God. This is really an Oscar night.
We're inviting some of the high brass at PricewaterhouseCoopers. You know, they like to do the accounting for... the awards.
Oh my
sometimes
God.
They flub it up.
We're cooking for accountants now.
So we're gonna make sure they're nice and fortified, so they don't mess it
so
up.
So they don't
anymore.
Get La La Land confused with Moon.
Moonlight.
Not Moonstruck.
Moonlight.
Yeah, not Moonstruck. That's a bit old.
Okay.
All right.
You couldn't find anyone else to bring to dinner.
That's who I wanted to invite.
Is your friend list that shallow? No pun intended.
How dare you? How dare you? Distastefully speak of accountants in such a way. We've got a lot of accountants, I'm sure, that listen to this show. Who's going to take the first course?
Well, I was going to start with A Star is Born and do a cocktail and do a little poo-poos with that.
Okay.
A cocktail has to be something more like a brown liqueur.
That makes sense, given one of the characters' demises.
So I think it's got to be fairly simple. I think a good... let's do a Manhattan, because that's going to satisfy just about everybody in the room as well. It's a good introduction. And then, Manhattan comes with... Do you put a cherry in Manhattan or not? Somebody said yes. Okay, good. Just want to make sure I'm right.
Tom is laughing. His shoulders and are then, like shrugging up
what,
and down
Tom?
With laughter.
Some people go, no cherries.
Have you ever seen A Star is Born?
Yes.
No.
Well, then you should recognize that he doesn't drink Manhattans. He drinks whiskey out of the bottle and beer.
But I'm trying. We have. Remember,
he's a good
we have
old
guests.
Boy.
Yeah.
We have guests.
Oh, we have guests.
Right.
He's classing it up for
yes,
the Oscars.
I'm just trying to be useful here.
Okay.
As opposed to just taking it out of the bottle.
So Manhattan.
Manhattan. And then some dry, not dry, some prosciutto, cured meat, basically. To go with that Manhattan, to go have a nice little entry to the dinner, maybe rolled in dates. Dates and rolled prosciutto, just very simply down. Yes, Tom?
Is it hard to focus on your course when Tom is laughing at
yes,
you?
Yes, I'm like...
I'm laughing with you, Chef.
Yes, I see that. And
I feel like you haven't seen the movie.
I saw the movie.
Okay.
I saw the movie, he
They're
says.
They're spending their time in bars, the drinking, and in diners. How's that? How about some mac and cheese? Maybe you want to make a little...
No. It's your course. I was just... I was chuckling. I didn't mean to come on
I want the accountant
on the mic.
To have a good dinner and
yes,
be able to
I
vote clearly.
Exactly.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Chef, you're next.
So I think I'm going to go with Bohemian Rhapsody because I love Queens. I know that sounds kind of weird, but I do. I like their music, most importantly. Uh-huh.
Queens?
Yes.
You mean
movie.
Queen?
Yeah, Queen. Oh, Queen, not Queens.
There's no S in Queen.
Well, there's two of them. There's a real
goodness.
One and there is a movie one.
And neither have an S.
No, but once you put them together, they do. I'm going to do a lamb, kind of like ground lamb sloppy joe. How's that? Nice little stew of lamb melted down completely to a beautiful little stew and then put that on two buns, toasted, a little lemon confit because I can't help myself, but... I think that lemon confit goes really well with lamb, little harissa because I masked with the lamb, and then some maybe some nice little green on the outside, some very punchy green arugula right now, watercress, you know, to put that on the outside so you have a nice little bite of bitterness going through that rich stew.
I thought for sure you were going to take it in an Egyptian direction.
I was going to stop there because Tom has to do the dessert now.
Okay, Tom, you've got to do the dessert.
So is Green Book the one where the guy from New York drives the black man who's the singer who's not allowed anywhere in the South?
He's a pianist.
Driving around the
South.
Right.
Gorgeous movie. So I saw that movie. It was a really cool movie. And you know, some of these places in the South are just probably still there, just throwbacks to kind of a old-fashioned dining scene. So for dessert, we're going to do baked Alaska.
Or pie.
Or pie. A pecan pie.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Pecan pie would be delicious.
With some vanilla ice cream. We'll keep it simple.
Yeah.
So those are my Oscar picks.
Wow. This is going to be an insane Oscars dinner.
All right. Next one up, it's the Baker's Corner with Chef Brittany Bartleben from the Dahlia Bakery on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Welcome back. It's the Seattle Kitchen from the Hot Stove Society here in downtown Seattle. My name is Tom Douglas, restaurateur and all that sort of thing. We still got a couple of segments left. This one and then Food for Thought Tasty Trivia is going to wrap us up for the day. This one is the Baker's Corner, and Chef Bartleben has come over from the Dahlia Bakery. Not only is she a fantastic baker, but she is a mom of somebody who loves trashy desserts, only because they've been force-fed them for, 10 years now?
Four years
now.
If your kid is 10 years, I'm retired. Yeah. That's it. I'm done.
Anyway, so Chef Brittany Bartleben is here. She is a fan of trashy desserts and also the fine goodness that you get at the Dahlia Lounge and the Dahlia Bakery.
Yeah, so, best of both worlds.
There it is. Yeah. So today you're going to talk a little bit about cooking for youngsters, baking for youngsters.
Baking with youngsters, specifically.
Youngsters.
Yes, we've got a class coming up in April at the Hot Stove Society. It'll be my first time teaching a group of kids to bake. So, I mean, I've worked with my son, what little you can do with a four-year-old, but yeah, I'm actually really excited about it.
Do you know how horrific it's going to be to have 20 10-year-olds running around at the same time?
One day. I mean, 20 drunk adults can be equally as horrific. So.
Can be equally as bad?
Yeah.
I know. I think you're right. There is more damage to be done than 20 drunk adults.
Absolutely.
I like that we're equating, like, a drunk adult with the skills
with
of a 10-year-old.
Yeah, it's about equal. Yeah. So,
all right. So go ahead.
We're going to be teaching them four different recipes. And we're going to be starting out with what we're calling the Everything Chip Cookie. So it's basically a chocolate chip cookie, but we're going to lay out candy and
kale chips, pretzels, potato chips,
all the things they could possibly want to load into that cookie personalize it and make it their own.
Do you get to whack the potato chips and the pretzels in the rolling pan?
Yeah. All that good stuff.
That sounds interesting already.
We are going to do some whoopie pies, fruit and cream whoopie pies, and I'm going to show them how to make jam as well, some homemade strawberry jam to fill the whoopie pies with.
That's a little bit dangerous.
Yeah, a little bit, probably. I mean, they're not actually going to make the jam. They're going to watch me make the jam. Then they're going to make their own little whoopie pie and fill them.
And so do they get to... Whoopie pie is just like that kind of spongy cookie with the, right? Do you always dip them in chocolate or?
Sandwich them.
You sandwich them, but you don't dip them at all.
You can, but we're not going to this time. Okay. We're going to do a little cream cheese icing and some jam in these ones.
Yum.
Yes.
So good.
So delicious. And then we're going to do a cheesy drop biscuit. And so they're going to learn the basic biscuit method. And again, we're going to have all sorts of herbs, different cheeses, bacon, whatever
so
they want to do.
Savory and sweet.
I think after all that sugar, those kids are going to need
something to ground them with.
Yeah.
Nice stone in the stomach
exactly.
To really sop it all up.
Then we'll send them home to their kids all hopped up on sugar.
Bye. It's your problem now.
Exactly.
Let's go back to the biscuits because I think that's just something that... it's near and dear to my heart because one of the ways I started cooking was making breakfast for my parents. You know, I have six sisters and a brother and myself. And it turns out when I started making breakfast for my parents on Saturday mornings, we stopped having children in our family. So just a little FYI that the interruption is not necessarily a bad thing.
Yeah. I think it's great for kids to start cooking early. I mean, I started very early making huge messes in my kitchen. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a few steps you can take to make it a little easier on yourself and on everyone, myself included. I've just started working with my son, and one of the things I've learned is to just have everything pre-measured, have all of your mise en place ready, so that way you can sort of not pay attention to that part. And it's over and done with, because you can be really distracted when you're working with kids.
Big bowl, and you can have them play in there. And
yeah. Absolutely.
It's not all over the floor.
Yeah, and do age-appropriate things. The first thing I ever did with my son was make pancakes. So he got to stir the batter and add everything to the bowl. We obviously did not have him actually cook the pancakes because that's not safe. But, I mean, they even make knives these days that really young kids can use. My son has one. I mean, they're not the loveliest knives, and you're not going to get perfect brunoise of anything. But that really, he has a blast with that, so...
I always find that baking seems like the perfect causeway for kids to get into the kitchen because they understand the outcome. It's an outcome that's exciting to them. It's
cookies,
not like you're just like,
now you get some broccoli.
Yeah, exactly. Like no kid gets really amped up about that in particular.
Yeah.
And so to understand that there's going to be like delicious warm cookies that are the net result of them being in the kitchen, I think, is a really great motivator.
Yeah.
And as you pointed out, very few sharp objects.
Very few sharp objects. And also, you need to accept before going in that your kitchen is going to be messy. Just accept it as an inevitability.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And put a big giant top on the floor.
Let go. Exactly. Let go of that. I personally have a little bit of a hard time with that in my kitchen at home. But it's just
everybody
like, you know
does.
What? It's exactly. Get
but
over
even,
it.
But even what you're saying about the mise en place and having everything measured out, I think... You know, obviously it's still going to get messy. Mm-hmm. You have to be okay with that. It's not about keeping a clean kitchen. But that kind of does reduce some of the amount of mess that could potentially happen.
Absolutely.
Scooping flour, scooping sugar, and all that stuff.
Yeah, I agree.
And also, you probably have a neighbor who has kids. Just invite yourself to their house.
Yeah.
Hey, I'll do the cooking.
Yeah. It's just an area that, you know, sometimes when you look at ways to get kids more interested in food or get them to eat foods that are good for them, you slip maybe pureed carrots into a tomato sauce, right? Or you figure out a way to kind of be sly about something that they like, but to get in something good for them. Is this a good way to do some of those things?
Absolutely.
Like what is a secret ingredient that your kid might say on this end of things, I hate pecans, but when you slip them into a chocolate chip cookie, you kind of get them down the road a little bit, and you say, you know, you just ate a pecan, and they're like, freak out.
Yeah. Yeah. I would say usually vegetables are it's very common for kids to not want to eat those, but you can snake zucchini into a quick bread. Chocolate zucchini bread is absolutely delicious. It's one of the first things I ate. Was willing to eat zucchini in, and before they know it, they love zucchini.
Huh.
Yeah.
Brittany, have you ever messed around with the whole, like, black bean chocolate cake? Is that something you've tried
to
do?
No. I've been very curious about it, though, and it's on my list of things to try to try and get some more protein into my son.
I definitely had some hippie days in my past that I don't really let out into the public very often.
Except on the radio, 10,000 people.
Let's just say legs weren't getting shaved and things were happening.
We all had our phases,
But I remember that being surprisingly delicious.
I had heard that's a pretty solid recipe.
Yeah, it's moisture and there's a natural amount of starch. I always just think, like, what a nice substitution to get a little bit more healthfulness into the baking.
Yeah.
That is probably very indiscernible to a child's palate.
I would say usually vegetables in particular, when they're paired with cheese, that's a really easy way to get kids to eat them. And the cheesy biscuit is a perfect way. Mm-hmm. I mean, throw in some roasted broccoli to a biscuit or something like that. And if it's surrounded by gooey cheddar cheese, they're going to...
Yeah, I have an older son who's getting married this year. Did not like cheese when he was a kid. I was like...
You're screwed.
French son doesn't like cheese. What the heck am I going to do with that? Well, he liked it on pizza, and he liked it cooked, which is interesting. You know, he didn't like it raw, but he liked it cooked. So there's always a way around everything.
Always a way.
What do you do about the world today where everyone wins? What if the cookie is terrible? Do you sit the kid down and say, dude, that is the worst cookie I ever tasted? Or do you have to give them a prize?
Neither.
You don't give a prize to somebody who's making cookies.
Yeah,
you
know, they already get the prize.
They already get the prize, right?
Yeah, I mean, I would say I would deal with it the same way I would when I personally screwed something up. It's just like, well, this is how we learn, and you try again. You have to be willing to make some mistakes.
You're
and
so
yeah.
positive.
Yeah.
And eat it anyway.
Yeah.
Tom would definitely
exactly.
point out the...
Yeah.
Hey, buddy, you screwed up.
Now, let's talk about the edge on that cookie. It's not quite lacy enough, and it's not quite crispy enough.
Yeah.
Maybe if you creamed your butter a little bit more.
A little bit more salt. Yeah. I'm sure you didn't pick up on
You don't talk like that to a four-year-old, Tom. You wait till they grow up and can actually understand what you're talking about.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Do you set them up for success later, or set them up for...
Boy,
how tough
I'll
life
let you
is.
Know. I've only done a few things with the four-year-old, but if I'm going to have 29-year-olds, we'll see how that goes. It's a learning experience for me as well.
I think what's important is you're teaching him to get in the kitchen. I think
absolutely.
More importantly than anything else. Don't be scared of the kitchen.
Yes.
What's the date you're doing your class?
April 27th.
April 27th.
Yes.
I just have to make sure I'm out of town that week.
You're not swinging by?
Up next, we have Food for Thought, Tasty Trivia. That's Brittany Bartleben. Are you going to stay and play?
I would love to.
Stay and play.
Stay and play.
Brittany Bartleben on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Time for Food for Thought, Tasty Trivia in the Seattle kitchen on Cairo Radio. I'm Tom Douglas, one of the combatants today.
And I'm Thierry Roturo, the other gladiator.
And I'm Katie O, and I'm going to be conducting this quiz today. Normally, I have to play against the two of you, but our chef, Brittany Bartleben, has decided to stay and play Food for Thought Tasty Trivia Challenge.
She's a tough contestant, too.
That is. She is a very tough contestant. You have your work cut out for you. Each of you are going to receive 5 questions, and whoever gets the most correct is obviously the winner, and whoever gets the least amount correct is obviously going to be the loser. And as we like to do, you'll be playing for one of our listeners today. It is Jim in our audience who was brave enough to come up to the microphone and ask all of us how we would deal with a dinner party with many restrictions.
Correct.
I think is what I would say about that. So, Thierry Roturo, what will you give to Jim if you lose today?
Well, I think we should bring him to brunch or lunch or dinner. Which one would you like, Luc or Lule?
Lule.
So, dinner for two at Lule.
Wow, dinner for two at Lule.
Chef Trey Roturo Magnifique. Stepping up to the plate.
Oui.
Yeah.
Tom, how about you?
I hope I lose for you.
Me too.
I will do a special menu. We serve a lot of vegetables at the Carlisle Room.
Love them.
And we have a rainbow platter there.
Oh,
that
it's delicious.
Quite delicious. So I will do a rainbow platter at the Carlisle Room with some big martinis so that you can get over the fact that your wife doesn't eat anything.
Who doesn't love a good martini? All right, Brittany, if you should lose.
And she can have that, right? She can eat she can do a martini.
Well,
what sort of restrictions are we working with here?
Celiac.
Okay.
A vegetarian. And
No nightshades.
Let's do lunch for two at the Dahlia Lounge. Chef
there
Brock
you.
Has
yeah,
a
we'll
wonderful...
Brock, we'll make Brock
we'll
deal
Brock
with it.
Deal with
Brock
that.
Can handle it.
I'm thinking anything from the bakery is going to be riddled with flour.
I just love the quick fire challenge. Mm. Oh, give it to somebody else.
Pass that off to Brock.
Okay, all right. Perfect. All right, Terry, you like to go first?
Yes, please.
Your first question. What kind of orange is used to flavor Earl Grey tea?
Orange is the new black tea. Aren't you glad I gave you a clue?
Bergamot?
Bergamot.
That is correct, yes. Terry?
Guess not.
Which seed has been used for centuries to color cheddar cheese? I know Tom knows.
Annotto.
Annotto is what we're
sorry, my Italian
for.
Accent is a little bit off.
Yeah, it's a very odd pronunciation, but I feel like...
Annotto.
You got there. Your third question. The English word for which popular spice takes its name from the Latin or French word for nail? Is it cumin, cloves, or nutmeg?
Cloves.
That is correct. Latin clavis. Or what's the French word?
Clou.
Yes, that's the one.
C-L-O-U.
Very nice. You're doing really great today. 3 out of 3 so far. Your fourth question. The name of which very popular edible product translated means twice cooked?
Biscuits, because bis means two. And kuit means kuf.
Sure. You got it. That is the correct answer. And your final question, what is green horseradish called in Japan?
Wasabi.
That's correct. Very nice. All right, Tui Retro. Very fine showing.
Sorry, Jim. You're going to have to go pay for
Jim,
your dinner.
Jim, I have a feeling you're not going to go to Lule for dinner. All right. Would you like to go next, Brittany?
I would love to.
All right. The following, you're going to get a quarter of a point for every single one you answer. So, in fact, you're getting four questions in one. All right?
All right.
The following are translations for various Italian pastas. Can you name the pastas? Little worms. What is it?
The one I'm thinking of. I'm pretty sure that's not it.
Little worms.
I know what they look like, but I don't know what's called. The ones that look like little worms. The little grubby ones.
Worminatas.
No, it's not penne, is it? No.
No, that would be worminati.
Vermicelli.
Vermicelli. Okay.
Vermicelli's. Yeah. Little worms. Okay, we've still got three more.
I'm not going to get any of these.
Cooking pot.
No clue.
Lasagna.
Okay.
Okay. Little tongues.
Nope.
Oh, come on.
I am not a pasta person.
Look at you. Like, stop asking me these questions. It's linguine.
Okay.
And the final one, butterflies.
Farfalle?
You know, you would think.
Yeah.
You would think. It's tortellini.
All right.
I'm sorry, Brittany. That was no percentage of a point right there.
No.
Okay, your next question, a non-pasta-related question. The name of which popular herb stems from the Latin word for dew of the sea? Dew of the sea. Latin words. Dew of the sea. Is it thyme? Is it rosemary? Or is it nutmeg?
Thyme.
It's actually rosemary.
Okay.
Rosemary is what we were looking for. Your next question. What spice plant is unique for producing two distinct spices? Is it paprika? Is it turmeric? Or is it nutmeg?
Turmeric.
Nope. It is actually nutmeg. What name is given to a type of hard wheat semolina originating from North Africa, which is soaked in water and served with spicy meat and vegetables?
Couscous.
Yes.
That is correct. Oh, very nice.
She's on the board.
She's on the board. And your final question, what is another name of the papaya or the tree melon? Tree melon. Is it papa? Is it pawnee? Or is it papi?
Papa.
Papa is correct. Very nice.
You made up
for those first three. 2 out of 5. Tom, you ready?
I don't think so after that.
No.
Yellowish-brown raw cane sugar is called Demerara sugar after the region where it is produced. But where is that? Is that in Ethiopia? Is it Guyana? Or is it Brazil?
Brazil, absolutely.
Absolutely not. It's Guyana. All right, your next question. I like the confidence, though, coming in hot. What is the culinary name for a bunch of herbs used in flavorings? Maybe, say, in a stock.
Bouquet garni.
Yes.
Oui, oui. Your third question. What name is given to a small fireproof dish used for cooking small portions of food?
Casserole.
That is not what we were looking for. We were looking for a cocotte.
Oh.
I like how Jerry's like,
You know, you had to say it was French, too. Because casserole is the word we use in English.
I would accept a Dutch oven here.
Well, yes, Dutch oven is true.
Casserole, the same thing.
I would,
hate to break it to
you. All right, well, you know what? Will you give him casserole, too?
Sure.
Brittany's fine, whatever. She's over this.
She's so angry right now.
She's got the sauce.
Cassalia's really good.
Yes.
She's got pasta coming out of her ears.
Yes. Question 2. All right, Tom. Which marinated fish is named after a famous German leader? Is it Bismarck herring, Merkel anchovies, or Kissinger herring?
I'm going to go with Bismarck.
Yeah, that would be good.
Bismarck herring, also known as pickled herring. That's correct.
That's the donut stuffed with anchovies.
Ooh, sounds like a good donut. All right, your final question. What are the two main ingredients in kedgeree? Is it fish and potato? Is it fish and rice? Or is it potato and leeks?
I'm going to go potato and leeks.
It's actually fish and rice.
Fish and rice. We feel good about Jim winning... lunch for two at the Dahlia Lounge.
Yeah,
is that
I feel
right?
good about that. Jim, do you feel good about that?
All right, Jim's giving a thumbs up. All right, congratulations. If you want to be like Jim and come to the show, just go to hotstovesociety.com and buy a ticket for only $15. Comes with breakfast and coffee. If you want to be part of the show electronically, you can go send us a note on Facebook or Twitter. The show is produced by Large Media. That's L-A-R-J Media. Our lead producer is Sarah Leibovitz. And our sound engineer is Sean Don't Call Me Del Torre. Also, remember, if you miss any episode of Seattle Kitchen, you can subscribe to our podcast through Apple Podcasts or download the Cairo Radio app and search for Seattle Kitchen.
Thanks for listening.
Have a great weekend.